Good evening, this is Truth Quest, and that was The Police, Every Breath You Take. And this, like I said, this is Truth Quest with Melody, and this is KHEN 106.9 Salida Community Supported Radio, and it's KHEN.org streaming on the internet. And the temperature is 69 degrees. And I will first read a disclaimer. The opinions expressed by the hosts and guests on this show do not necessarily represent the views of KHEN, its staff, or board of directors, or underwriters. And tonight I have a guest on that I'm really looking forward to. It's Deanna Spingola, and her articles appear on News with Views, the Muckraker Report, Renew America, The People's Voice, The Conspiracy Archive, and other opinion sites, including her own. She has also been a guest on numerous radio programs. She writes about government corruption, the New World Order, constitutional issues, warfare, and is the author of two unrelated books. She grew up and attended school in California. She has been an independent businesswoman and has traveled extensively. She's an avid reader and has an extensive library of nonfiction books. She's active in family history research and lectures on that topic. Currently, she's a director of the local Family History Center and is also very creative. Her intricately designed art quilts adorn the walls of her home and are featured in her two books. Are you there, Deanna?
I am.
Great.
At 69 where you're at. Oh, my goodness.
Why? Where is it where you're at?
It's at the Chicago area. It's very, very cold.
Oh, so you're actually an hour. I was thinking you were hour behind, but you're an hour ahead then.
Right.
Ah, so it's even later there. Well, I'm kind of excited to get into some of this information that you've been writing about, and I think I'll kind of let you get started here and kind of let you start.
Okay. One of my most recent articles is called Listen Up, Eye Rollers. And we all have friends that we really want to talk about the New World Order and the things that are going on in our country. As we attempt to do this, many of them look at us, they roll their eyes in exasperation, and they think that we're conspiracy nuts. And for the majority really get most of their information from broadcast media. They go to government schools, and they get all of their information and formulate their perceptions from what they learn at school. And when you go to a government school, you are never, ever going to dissent against the government, because that is just not the way that you're taught in government schools. Dissent, really, is the highest form of patriotism. But we're taught to be pretty obedient, never ask questions, and never oppose anything that the government does. And yet we know the politicians, via the U.S. government, they lie, they cheat, they steal, they misappropriate public funds, they seize and redistribute our private funds. They've outsourced the middle-class jobs through phony trade agreements. We have the privately owned Federal Reserve. They've given away or sold our technology. They've given away or sold our public lands to well-connected private citizens in foreign countries. They secretly initiated the North American Union. They've confiscated private property. They kill and maim its own citizens. They kill and maim foreign citizens. And they've actually established kind of a Nazi-style police state. And yet, private citizens still have some degree of trust in the government.
Well, often I get the fact is, you know, can't you think of something positive?
Right. Well, That's a good question. Can't we think of something positive? But you see, most people are in a state of denial, and they really don't want to get out of that comfort zone. And because if you learn something, you have to act on it.
Yeah, and that's a scary thing for some people.
Right. And most people would just rather remain in their comfort zone and live in a state of denial because it's easier. It doesn't require any action on their part. And that's kind of sad. And the other problem, of course, is that we are media mesmerized. We are addicted to entertainment. We watch TV too much. And we believe, like when we see sitcoms or we see movies, that has become what we think life is. And it really isn't. There's a lot of terrible things going on. But as long as we're being entertained, we're distracted. We're distracted by the fluff news. A lot of things that we read in the newspaper or hear on TV is just fluff. It's just for entertainment value. There's no real news on TV. You can't get, in 5 minutes, you cannot get what is going on in the entire world. Even in your community.
Yeah, I walked into a business today and was only there for just a few minutes, and they happened to have a TV on in the business, and what I noticed was on there was something about Britney Spears. It's like...
Like, who cares? Who cares about this dysfunctional person? And, of course, every murder has to become just, they sensationalize it, like the Stacey Peterson, and these are terrible. Terrible, terrible things. The Natalie Holloway, who disappeared down in the islands. Terrible thing. It's a terrible thing. But to spend so much time on just individual incidences when there are thousands of people, millions of people dying in the war, when the military is having, well, We don't see the body bags come home. We don't hear about the troops that are coming home that are suffering from depleted uranium illnesses. We don't hear about some of those tragic things. And they don't want us to hear about that because then they would lose the support that they have for the war. Although I think, from what I can tell, there is a lot of anti-war mentality. I marched in the anti-war demonstration at the end of October. It was October 27th. We had an anti-war demonstration here in the Chicago area. And it was a huge, huge crowd of people. I mean, there were probably 5,000 to 6,000 people who marched in this parade. And there were, the whole time during the whole route, and it was probably 3 or 4 miles, or maybe 5 even, and the entire route, we got a lot of high fives, we got a lot of waving, a lot of thumbs up, and people were very supportive. There was a great big police presence. There was policemen along the route, and probably just waiting for any kind of disturbance at all. And there were about 10 people who were gathered all together in one little place who were pro-war. So guess what we saw on the TV the next day and that evening? They focused on those 10 people, not on the 5,000 that were saying they were against the war, but on the 10 people who were saying, yes, we want this war to go on, and we believe in fighting these horrible terrorists, without ever asking, well, who are the terrorists, really? What happened? How did this whole thing get started? And in order to figure out what's going on today, you really have to go back and read a little bit of history. Now, I love history, and I think that in order to gain an accurate perception of what is going on, we need to find out what has gone on, what has transpired in the past.
And that's really important, because I'm finding that things kind of, you know, they find out things kind of repeat themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you don't know history, then you're going to live in a vacuum. And when the TV says, oh, goodness, we have this terrible man over in Iraq, and he's got these terrible weapons, and we need to go and get him, and this is awful. But if you don't know anything about the Middle East and the whole history, then you're living in this little vacuum, and you're vulnerable to what you hear on the TV. And the whole history of the Middle East started with Britain and Iran. And I just finished listening to this one, to a book. It's called All the Shah's Men by Stephen Kinzer. He's one of my very favorite authors. And he goes over the entire history of Britain's experience in Iran. And how they went in, they initially discovered oil early on in about 1909. And this was just before World War One, and it was just about the time where they were figuring out, you know, we really need oil to execute wars and for energy. And Iran had oil, and the Iranians didn't know what to do with it. They were a third world undeveloped country. They weren't industrialized. And so the Brits decided that they would go in and basically get the oil without you know, they were going to just go in and take it and plunder it and give the Iranians just as little as they could as far as money. They weren't going to actually pay for it. They were going to just plunder it. And that's what a lot of war and a lot of the police actions are about, is seizing resources, seizing power. And I believe, and I think most Americans believe, that a country's resources should benefit the residents of that particular country, not the people that come in and seize those resources. That is terrible. And there are sufficient resources for everybody. There is enough and to spare. We're not going to run short of resources. But the power elite, those who grab the resources, who control the resources, can manufacture shortages. For instance, in 1973, we had the so-called, the alleged oil shortage. Well, it wasn't really an oil shortage. It was an opportunity for them to increase the price dramatically and to control the oil resources.
Well, gee, now, what happened now, too?
Peak oil. And peak oil is, you know, it's just not a fact. Mm-hmm. There is sufficient oil. In fact, there is enough oil in Alaska, on the North Slope of Alaska, to last us for 200 to 300 years. And yet, the power elite, the people who own the oil resources or who control the oil resources, and it started out with Rockefeller, they want to control the price. Because if they can create shortages, or say there are shortages, they can increase the price and accumulate a great deal of wealth. And the wealthy, they're very greedy people. There is never enough. And it's not just about money, it's about power. It's about controlling people. It's about seizing a free agency. You take choices away from a large group of people, and you control them. So it's very interesting.
And maybe you want to get into the type of people that are trying to maintain this power.
I've written a lot about Rockefeller, the Rockefeller family, and John D. Rockefeller was the first one to discover oil, or he was in a partnership with another individual. It was in Pennsylvania, and he absolutely detested competition. He thought, in fact, he would buy up his competitors, and if they would not allow him to buy them up, he would arrange accidents, explosions, or he would, the other thing that he would do was he would take over like the barrel companies where they needed to purchase barrels to put oil in, or he would monopolize the transportation. He would buy up the tankers. that the other companies would need to transport their oil in order to eliminate all competition. And little by little by little by little, he purchased all of his competition. However, he never allowed the media, the population, through the media, to know that he, in fact, owned the very company that he claimed was his competition.
So, in other words, he made it appear that there was more than, that there was competition.
Right. And that also happens in government, where basically you're talking about Hegelian dialectics. In other words, you want to have thesis, antithesis, so that you can arrive at what you actually want to begin with. In other words, you create an enemy, okay, like communism,
mm-hmm.
or terrorism, or any kind of ism. There always has to be an enemy involved. And most of the time we manufacture our own.
That way you're controlling it.
Right. But mm-hmm. you're really controlling both sides.
Mm-hmm.
You're really controlling both sides. And, for instance, with communism, if you looked at the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto, America is pretty much fallen in line with those 10 planks, with graduated income tax and with free public education and all the other things, the central bank. And you think, well, gosh, we've adopted a lot of those things, so what does that make us? But communism itself and the Bolshevik revolution was financed by Wall Street. Hitler was financed by Wall Street. In fact, Hitler was financed by a bank that Prescott Bush was a leader in, had a voice in. And so, I mean, that's pretty startling when you look at family histories and recognize that.
Actually, a lot of the characters from back in that time period are very much either they or their descendants are still involved and are heavily in our politics that's taking place.
Oh, yes, they're still around. And some of the same people in government. Look at Rumsfeld. Look at Cheney. Look at some of the people, what they refer to as the neocons that were in the first Bush administration. Oh, goodness, they've showed up again in this Bush administration.
In fact, I think Rumsfeld and Cheney even were before Bush's.
Right, they were, mm-hmm. absolutely. They mm-hmm. they were in the Reagan administration, and they've been around a long time. And before that, they were in Congress. And a lot of these people are also members of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a group, a secretive group. You don't hear too much about them. But their goal is to destroy the sovereignty of this country.
And they're just about there.
We're just about there. And particularly, like with the North American Union. We hear nothing about the North American Union. I think there's only one mainstream media personality, Lou Dobbs, who has even mentioned the North American Union.
In fact, I've even heard some of the people say that they are still even denying that it's even existing.
Oh, absolutely. You have the government shills. And by government shills, I mean, people like Ann Coulter and Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. And these people were set up to early on. Rush Limbaugh was the first so-called, what would you call him, right-wing media personality. And they were set up as the conservative press because there's this rumor, this myth, that the press is liberal. Well, if the press were liberal, if the press were anti-government, there would be demands for impeachment. There would for Bush, for Cheney, there would be rhetoric about their lying to get us into war. The media is not liberal. that is a myth.
It's very much controlled.
It was set up so that there would be this opposition. You know, there's got to be opposition in all things. And so you have the right and the left, and you have the liberal and you have the conservative. But the fact is that the power elite own both sides. If there were both sides, if there were two sides, for instance, in the 2004 election, you had John Kerry, who belongs to Skull and Bones, which is another secret society associated with Yale University. It's called the Brotherhood of Death. John Kerry belongs to Skull and Bones. Well, guess what? So does George W. Bush. So did George H.W. Bush, and so did Prescott Bush. And this is where their loyalties lie. In fact, the Skull and Bones, boners, actually, their first loyalty is not to their country, but to their brotherhood. And so one of the first things that George W. Bush did after he was elected, after he was installed, I don't want to say that he was elected, because there were big questions in the Florida voting, in the Florida election, big questions about vote fraud. And in fact, I totally believe there was vote fraud in Florida in 2000 and in Ohio in 2004. And if you look in the background of Florida, there was like 57,000 Democrats that they claimed were felons, and they were taken off of the voter rolls. People would show up to vote, and these were Democrats. They would show up to vote and would not be allowed to vote. And basically, that election in Florida was that they were going to recount, and then Secretary of State Catherine, what's her name?
Harris.
Who?
Harris.
Yes. Catherine Harris said, no, we're not going to do that. We are, and she was Republican. We're calling the election, basically, and it went to the court. And, which was the court that was installed by the first President Bush in the Supreme Court. So, I mean, the people didn't vote. Sure, some of the people voted. And also, you know, politicians run on, well, like the political race that we're having now, the primaries. You know, all the politicians basically sound exactly alike. All the Republicans sound exactly alike. Most of them are pro-war. There's no difference between the rhetoric of one versus another.
The one that I find strange about that whole, they keep using the word change, but they don't say what change is.
Yes. Change to what? Change personalities. That's it. We're going to change personalities. We're going to pursue the same horrible foreign policy. We're going to pursue the war. We're not going to do anything with the economy. The only thing that changes is the personalities. And these people, really, the people who are elected or who are installed, who actually chooses these people? We are given a choice. Okay, you can vote for Big Business Party A or Big Business Party B, either Republican or Democrat. It's both the same party, just two factions of the Big Business Party. And no one can run for office and actually get installed unless they've been approved by another secret organization called the Bilderbergers. And this is something you never hear about. Nobody ever writes about the Bilderbergers. It's a secretive organization. They meet once a year. It's a group of media people. It's big business. And they decide, okay, who's going to go along with our agenda? Who is going to allow us, these multinational businesses, who is going to allow multinational business to use the CIA, which was created in 1947, for the purpose not of collecting intelligence, but for the purpose of orchestrating chaos in other countries, to go into other countries and orchestrate chaos, and to fix elections, and to blow things up, and to create chaos. And that is what their job is. In fact, it's in their job description.
Well, did you not say something to the effect that maybe it was like the police force for the elite? I mean,
yes. Okay. And they are directly responsible to the president. But basically, what they are doing is promoting big business. They are creating chaos, creating an environment where they demoralize third world countries, populations of third world countries, so that big business can come in and take over.
And use their resources.
And use the resources, right. So when we go in, we're not making countries safe for democracy. We are making countries safe for big business. We are making countries safe for United Fruit Company. We are making countries safe for Standard Oil. And basically that was the whole purpose of the Vietnam War. It was America's war in Vietnam. We actually started back in the last century when we went into the Philippines, when we went into Cuba, which we did under the false flag of the Maine. When our ship was sitting in Havana Harbor, there was this big explosion, and they blamed it on the Spanish. So, you know, Americans died, so they used that, the government used that to go in and go into Cuba.
And so, and who really did do that?
Pardon me?
And who really did do that explosion?
Actually, it was discovered sometime later that it was an internal explosion. Had absolutely nothing to do with any other entity. Had nothing to do with Spanish. Had nothing to do with anybody. It was an internal explosion.
Huh? Because that's. I'll have to look at that. Because I was under the impression it was something else, but I, you know.
And of course, there was the Lusitania, Pearl Harbor, and Tonkin Bay, 9/11. America would not have entered World War I without the Lusitania.
So you're talking about false flag events.
False flag events, exactly. And in fact, there wouldn't be any war at all without the Federal Reserve. And because if the government came to the citizens and said, hey, we would like you to pay some more taxes here. Could each family divvy up or, you know, collect, how about $1,000? What would we say? We would say, no, I'm sorry, we don't want to do this. We're not going to do this. We're not going to pay for this. But see, with the Federal Reserve, the government can just go to the Federal Reserve, which is privately owned. Okay? The Federal Reserve is not federal. There are no reserves. All they do is print money. Now, the Federal Reserve Act was passed during the Christmas holidays in 1913. And, most of the people weren't even there to vote. And then they said, and they also did this with the income tax, these acts were never really ratified by the majority of the states. But the Federal Reserve Act gave the stewardship, the responsibility of printing money to the private banks. Then the private banks, they charge us 4 cents for every piece of paper. In other words, whether it's a dollar bill or whether it's a $100 bill, it costs 4 cents. Okay? And when Congress wants to do something like go to war, it doesn't matter if they don't have any money. They just go to the Federal Reserve and say, oh, could you print us up some money? We'd like to have a war. Or, you know, could you print us up some money? We'd like to do this or that. Or we're about $10 trillion in debt. Now, if we ran our households like that, if we went to the store and wrote a phony check, we'd be in jail.
Well, actually,
this is criminal activity. This And Congress should never, never have abdicated their responsibility. That is, it's unconstitutional. It's treasonous. They had no right to do it. And one of the things that Ron Paul is running on, and I'm a big Ron Paul fan, he is saying, let's get rid of the Federal Reserve. Let's get rid of the income tax. And people say, well, how can you get rid of income tax? How are we going to run our government? Well, you know what? You make your government smaller. You get rid of Homeland Security. You get rid of all, get rid of the Department of Education. You get rid of a lot of these bureaucracies that we don't need.
Actually,
we do not need these things.
Are you familiar with Walter Burian?
With who?
Walter Burian.
No.
Okay. He's actually even claims that we would be getting money back each year, that we have, there is so much money in our investment accounts through government that are like a second account, second set of books, and we would be getting money back. Now, he can explain it much better than me, but I've had him on the program, and he's really quite astute at following what the comprehensive annual financial statements are.
Hmm.
So.
Interesting.
And he's the only one I know out there that's really even purporting this, but he makes total sense.
Hmm.
So as far as the, what you were saying, you know, we wouldn't have the wars, but there were wars before the Federal Reserve.
Oh, sure. But since the Civil War, is really what clinched it. From the Civil War on, and that was a war that was not fought to free the slaves. Sorry, that was not the reason it was fought. It was fought, basically, to create a centralized warfare, welfare state. And that war is what did it. I mean, 600,000 people lost their lives. And there were other propositions to free the slaves. Okay, you could just buy them. The federal government could have bought this, paid the slave holders to free those slaves. There didn't need to be a war. The war was really over the states who wanted to succeed, which was their right to do. It was their right to do that.
And why did they want us to see?
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because the North was very industrialized and the South was very agrarian. And the South felt like the North was taking advantage they were just taking advantage of the resources of the South.
Okay.
And they didn't like it. And that's true in a lot of areas. For instance, you know, in Vietnam, you had the South, who was very agrarian, and the North, which was more industrialized. But there's a couple of books that are very, very good about Lincoln. And Lincoln wasn't the person that we have been trained, that we have been indoctrinated to think he was. One of the books is The Real Lincoln. There's a couple. In fact, I just communicated with the author not too long ago. He writes for Lou Rockwell. He's on Lou Rockwell often.
Uh-huh.
And he has some very, very, very interesting books. And very well documented.
Yeah, I think I highlighted some of them because, I mean, your reading list is of books that you've read is quite the list, and it's in it. And what I've really found, you know, and that's one of the things I'd kind of like to get across to some of our listeners here is that, you know, where you're coming from is you have an incredible background in history because, like I said, looking through the books that you've read, even though I haven't read them all, I am familiar with a lot of them, and I'm familiar with a lot of the, I could not tell you the hours I've spent listening to different radio programs and the sort, and people that write the books or people that speak of the books. And you've done such an incredible delving into what's going on in the world that it's really, I mean, if people had that the opportunity to read what you have read, you would have such a different perception of the world going on out there.
Absolutely. People don't read anymore. And one of the things I say at the top of my page of my book list is, what did I say? Those who will not read have no advantage over those who cannot read. And we choose to read, or we choose to be entertained. Reading involves your mind. When you're entertained, you're just basically, you're not interacting at all. You're not thinking, you're just zombie-like watching this tube. But when we read, we become involved. I love to read. I love to read. I've always loved to read, ever since I was a little kid. And I always went to the library. And in fact, when my children were young, we got rid of our television for about 8 years. We went to the library all the time. It was difficult the first. I will say that getting rid of your TV is a difficult thing to do, because you do not realize how much you depend on a television.
It's a brainwashing machine used by the government.
Oh my goodness! And I had to find things for my children to do. It was a big change. But it was a wonderful change. It was a wonderful, wonderful change. And my children are still readers. They still love to read. And people used to read all the time. And TV can be a wonderful thing, but it is also very addictive. And if you actually counted up the hours that a person watches TV a week, that's you're watching other people work is what you're doing.
I grew up by the TV. I mean, I literally was a, you know, couch potato, TV watcher as I grew up. And then, we moved to a place that didn't really have good TV reception. So I became a couch potato movie watcher. Uh-huh. And I watched thousands of movies. And then we finally got a satellite dish and sitting down my husband, who's disabled, you know, that was his form of entertainment. But I found that when I was able to finally get control of the remote, because that meant spending a little more money and getting another receiver and whatever, what I began to notice about the TV is how much of, even though there was this huge bigger difference in the amount of news channels and that to watch, it was scripted.
And I
would flip through the news, and I would find out they're saying the exact same thing.
Exactly. It's just different personalities, different faces, you know, different gender, but it's all the same thing.
Right.
And most of your TV, your channel, your stations, your media corporations, maybe 50 years ago, there were 85, and now we're down to 5. And these companies are also war profiteers.
Right.
And so, of course, they're not going to promote the anti-war agenda. In fact, if you talk about anti-war, you lose your show.
Well, even the ones that I found out that are somewhat alternative, supposedly,
mm-hmm.
you know, that some people still haven't even heard of, actually, because they do appear on other networks that many of them may not even be aware is there. I've even found that they're utilized by those same stations, and they will only speak of certain subjects. They don't really give the full news either.
Oh, right. Like when you talk to somebody about the North American Union or the New World Order or anything, they don't know what you're talking about. And yet the North American Union is almost a done deal.
Right.
Okay? It's going to happen before people can even dissent or object.
When they announce it, it will be fully operative.
Right. It'll be too late. And yet you have your government shills, those so-called conservative broadcasters who have the talk radio all day, who they claim are conservatives. They will not talk about the North American Union. If people call in to talk about it, they say, "Oh, that, are you kidding? That's just a conspiracy theory." Or if you call in to talk about 9/11, "Oh, that's just a conspiracy theory.
You're a nut."
Yes, you're crazy. And they just treat people terribly.
That I've found ridicule is often used by those who don't have an argument.
Oh, absolutely. Name calling, ridicule. It's much easier to call people a name than it is to actually have a debate with them using the facts.
And before I even understood what Rush Limbaugh was about, that was the one thing that I did pick out on him. Is I usually tried to find out, well, okay, Rush, you just made a statement. And I would listen and listen and finally go through the whole show. He never did explain it.
Right.
He never would explain it. And I'm going, there's something wrong here.
Exactly. What's your source? What is the basis of this information? And some of their arrogance. Oh, my goodness. Rudeness, arrogance.
But that's showman.
It is, but it's obnoxious. It's a turnoff.
Because I even find that in some of the programming that I do listen to. When you get onto the Internet, there's thousands of programs now. I cannot believe how many, and some really good ones. Yeah, and then there's, you know, your usual... ones that are owned by Clear Channel or your major media, but there's literally thousands of programs and all kinds of, you know, about all kinds of subjects.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I spend quite a bit of time doing, although I read quite a bit off the Internet because I find it to be a very good research.
Oh, it is. I love the Internet. You can find whole books on the Internet. Classics. It's wonderful. I really love the Internet. And you can find documents. You can find government documents. You can go into National Archives and go into those documents in there. And you really have to learn how to use Google and to use keywords. And, oh, my goodness, the things you can find, amazing. Amazing.
Right, and one of the things I like to use the Internet for is, you know, when you do find somebody, and when I first got started in even looking into the truth, you know, you'd hear these preposterous stories that you just didn't believe. I mean, you know, I was just like everybody else out there. I would question a lot of what was said. I had someone that was telling me all about the New World Order and the North American Union and stuff, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, and I just thought, you know, they were crazy.
But, sure.
But when you go in there, if you have time, you can just get in there and find a lot of places where they'll substantiate the information.
Right.
And even the guys that are in power right now, they really do, they like to tell us what they're going to do to us.
No, we're certainly, and, you know, as a teenager, I was when I read a book. It was called Auschwitz, and I read this book when I was 14. And I just could not understand how the Germans could possibly allow their government to do all these terrible things to invade Poland on September 1 of 1939. How they could have these concentration camps, and how they could have Kristallnacht and do all these terrible things to the Jewish population. And I thought, why did these Germans allow that?
I did
too.
Well,
you know, we're doing this. We are allowing our government to do the exact same thing. And I am sure that there are other people elsewhere, I know there are, who are saying, why do the Americans allow their government to do that? And we have gone into, well, we talked about Cuba just a little bit ago. We went into Hawaii because of Dole Pineapple, because of the sugar over there. Big business. We went in and we actually had a warship out sitting in Hawaii. That if they did not allow us to do certain things, if their queen, it was a queen at that point in time, if she did not allow our big business to come in, then, you know, see that warship out there? Guess what's going to happen to you? And this has been going on for over 100 years. And yet, does the population raise up and say, hey, we don't want you to treat other people like this. And so we are in the same situation as the Germans were during World War II. We are allowing it by our ignorance and by our apathy.
Even those of us that do complain and do write our congressmen and do make a noise and whatever, we kind of get drowned out.
We do. We get drowned out by the media. We sure do. And we should be writing our congressmen. But you know what? I have found, and I write to them, and I call their office, and I do all kinds of things, that they pretty much, and I have received letters back, that they pretty much don't represent us. They represent the lobbyist. If you look, and there are lists of the companies and exactly how much money, millions of dollars that they contribute to campaigns, you will see exactly who our representatives represent. And it is not the people, and it is not the Constitution. They do not abide by the Constitution. Haven't for decades. They do not represent us. They represent big business, period. End of statement. Well, they do not represent the best interest of the population of the United States.
Well, that's one thing that's different about Ron Paul, and he's probably...
He is so different.
He's been the largest moneymaker on the Internet. And at first, when I first heard, they had a day where they collected money for him to go on with his campaign. He didn't even know the name of the person that was behind it.
I know. Isn't that amazing? It was just amazing.
And I think they raised, between $4 and $8 million,
yes,
somewhere in there.
I think there was one day they did 10. Just amazing. Absolutely amazing. And, most of the candidates have what they call meetups, which is a local groups of people. And, I was just reading in American Free Press, yesterday, that the number of meetups that Ron Paul has is like 8,000 or something. And, I'll have to find it.
I notice we don't have any in our area.
I wonder. You're in Denver?
No, I'm in Salida.
Salida.
It's kind of like in the middle of the state. So.
Okay.
Denver's about 150 miles.
How many? What is the population there?
About 5,000.
Okay. We have a local meetup, and I found it on the Internet. You can find it by going to the Ron Paul site. RonPaul2008.com, I think, and or .org. I'm not sure which it is, but and then just type in your location.
Right, and there wasn't. That's when I, because I'm on his list too.
Yeah,
I'm on a number of their lists, but I am supporting Ron Paul, and that's because he is a constitutionalist.
Exactly, that's why I'm supporting him.
And to me, if we don't have the Constitution, we don't have a country.
That's right, and he is the only. He is so different than the other candidates. It is because the other candidates are not constitutional. The other candidates are all spewing the party line, the big business party line.
The people won't know that unless they start reading and studying and looking beyond that TV, because that TV is manipulated. And
right, and the debates, my goodness, they all but ignore him, and they threaten to not have him join the debates. And I think, quite frankly, that the power elite are absolutely, I think they're afraid of him, because he has such ground root support. He has such grassroots support. And, you know, he didn't decide to run. It was people who went to him and said, we want you to run. And I was a Ron Paul fan before he even became a candidate because of his constitutionality.
Right, and he was one that would that didn't support the war, and in his voting, you know, he voted
totally constitutional. Totally, he's called Dr. No because he says no. If that's not constitutional, we're not going to do it. I'm not going to vote for it. But his meetups, he's got the number of meetups that he has is 18,347. Okay, those are individual groups of people. And let's see, Dennis Kucinich has 2,174. He's next in line. Mitt Romney has two groups, two meetup groups.
Wow.
Hillary Clinton has 213. But here, Ron Paul, 18,347. And I belong to one locally, and we just opened our office yesterday. It was the first day that we have an office, and it's in a very, very well-traveled location. And I'm excited. We're excited. We're just, you know, we feel like we're really participating in the election process. And
But you read the book Black Box Voting, didn't you?
Oh, sure. By Bev Harris. Oh, yes.
And do you feel like that they've accomplished what, you know, she's a phenomenal woman in her research and that group. I cannot believe the amount of people that have donated their time, and I don't know if there's paid people involved there too, but
sure.
But the things that they've uncovered that have gone on with our voting process.
Oh yes. And the people involved, like the governor of Ohio, long before the election of 2004, said, "Oh, we'll give you Ohio."
And they did.
It's a done deal. Done deal. And what was the name of the candidate that I can't remember?
Was it Michael Bednarik? And
are you talking about
the Green Party one?
No, but there was in one of the elections, it was a congressional election. He was running for senator, and he actually owned the computer company, Diebold.
Oh, Dash? Was it Daschle?
Yeah, okay. That's who it was.
Right.
And, you know, he kept this hidden. You know, I mean, it's just...
If people would just type in some of these names on the internet, they would find out what conflict of interest is going on out there in that running our world. And if you know, unless you don't have a problem with that,
it's terrible. It's just a swinging door between big business and government. It's just like Rumsfeld when he came in. He was before he. Came into, let's see, what was he?
Secretary of Defense.
Early on.
Of Defense, yeah. Well, he's had a lot of positions.
He's had so many positions. He's been Secretary of Defense or Secretary of War twice. He was the youngest Secretary of Defense under Reagan. And, but before that, he was a congressman. He was a representative. He was here in Illinois, and basically before aspartame was okayed by the FDA, he was the president of the Searle Company, and he was president of the Searle Company after he was in Congress. Okay, and then he went back in to help Reagan set up kind of the transition team.
Mm-hmm.
And the FDA would absolutely not approve of aspartame because the trials were terrible. It was poison. Okay, it was an accident.
Well, it's ant poison, isn't it?
It was basically rat poison.
Rat poison?
Or ant poison.
Okay.
And somebody discovered by fluke that it was sweet. And they designed a sweetener and called aspartame. And the FDA would not approve of it. And since Rumsfeld had been in Congress before, and then when he went in at the
transition team,
then he said, you know, I've got a lot of markers to call in.
Right.
And within a couple of days, they changed the head of the FDA, pulled somebody in that would go along with them, and they got it passed. Aspartame was on the market, but it's poison. It has caused so much sickness, so much death, so much disease, and yet people continue to consume it.
Well, that's not the only one that he got approved in there, too. Wasn't it fluoride also?
Fluoride was actually before, I think.
Yeah, but didn't he have something to do with that? Or am I mistaken there?
Fluoride, I don't know, but fluoride is a terrible, terrible thing. In fact, there's a book called The Fluoride Deception. It should be on everybody's reading list, and everybody should read it. And if you can't read the book, then you need to read Google fluoride, poison. And you'll find out all kinds of things about how the Germans used it, how the...
they used it to kind of make people docile in the prison camps. Right.
Right. We have a water filter that removes the fluoride. But I've talked to my dentist several times. And the first time that I talked to him about it, he said, oh, that's some kind of communist conspiracy. And then he recognized that I believe it, you know. And so he backpedaled a bit. And he said, well, you know, maybe there might be something to it. But I'm sure he's laughing up his sleeve as soon as I leave the office. But... the fluoride is a very dangerous product.
Right.
It is a byproduct of aluminum.
Right. And I thought it was even a byproduct of some of the depleted uranium or the uranium industry. I'm not positive on that.
It's terrible. It's terrible. And yet you have people, dentists, who give fluoride treatments. It's not enough that you have to have it in your water. They're going to spread it all over your teeth. And yet, on the back of and fluoride toothpaste,
okay.
On the back it says, don't let children under six ingest this. Well, hello. If it's bad for children under six, it's bad for people over six.
Well, try to buy toothpaste at a regular grocery store. You can't. You have to go somewhere else to get non-fluoride toothpaste.
Right, which is what I do also.
Deanna, I need to kind of do a station thing here. So it's KHENLP 106.9 Salida. And this is Truth Quest, and I have my guests this evening is Deanna Spingola, and we're kind of talking about her background and her writing and her reading and a little bit of what's going on in the world. So what I kind of like to do is, you know, I was looking over this list that you've done, and I have some books here that I noticed that you read that I found extremely interesting. And I mean, because you're a mother, and do you have grandchildren? Or
I do.
Okay.
I do.
And yet you're reading some of these books that definitely. Are in a little bit different train than some people would have on their list, but they're very, very good books. Like one of them is Behold a Pale Horse by William Cooper. Why did you pick that?
Right, right. And, you know, he was murdered out in his front yard.
Right.
Yeah, the government doesn't like you to write books like that.
Well,
Another person that was murdered for what he wrote was Gary Webb.
Yeah, that was another one. I noticed you had read his book.
Yes.
Now, are these all read, or some of these, do you get them on books on tape or something? Do you do that?
What I do, I don't like to waste any time. If I can get a book on tape, that I can listen to a whole book in a week. Just, I go to the gym every morning, and I can listen to a whole book. Just going back and forth to the gym, going back and forth to the store. It's amazing how much time, or how much listening you can do. And then, of course, if I really love the book, if I love listening to it, then, of course, I have to have a hard copy. And I just have to have a reference library of my own, because I just love books. I just love books. And it's...
You don't have a lot of, it doesn't appear that you have a lot of novels or anything, although...
No, I don't do that.
Well, you know, but the one of the odd things, I was never a fiction reader until I found out, knowing some of the backgrounds of some of the authors, that they, sometimes you could tell the truth in a fiction.
Oh, yes, they incorporate, yes. They do incorporate a lot of, in fact, there's a book now that talks about 9/11, it's just coming out this month. Oh, my goodness, what's the name of it? They've really been pushing it on. I have a 9/11 list.
Uh-huh.
It's a Yahoo list. And they've really been pushing it. And it's basically supposed to be fictional, but it really incorporates a lot of truth.
I've not heard of this one, but I do know that, particularly in the science fiction area,
mm-hmm.
and when you... in the medical area,
oh, right.
Like Robin Cook.
Robin
or something.
Cook, I love Robin. Right. You know, yeah. Coma. You know, he did a lot of really, really interesting things.
I didn't realize how much truth he had in there. But
oh, right.
Yes.
Right. And I've read a lot of fiction, but it's got to be substance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got it. You know, not like romantic kind of garbage. I don't read that kind of stuff.
And actually, you know, of all the TV, and I don't do it often, but every once in a while I will watch the Sci-Fi Channel and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I am finding in my research into, because I'm like you, I spend a lot of time researching and reading, but I just have a different medium that I use a little bit more.
Sure.
And I do have the books, like I said earlier, but I find that some of the sci-fi programs actually do incorporate a lot of truth in them.
Oh,
and a lot of it is not accepted truth on, I mean, it might be accepted truth in the, are you familiar with the Disclosure Project?
No.
You're not. There's anywhere from 250 to 400 and some scientists that have worked around NASA or...
Oh, uh-huh.
And like, are you familiar with Stephen Greer?
No.
Anyways, he was kind of heading that up. Alfred Weber's involved with it, and I've had him on the program.
Oh, right. I've heard of him.
And they're scientists that they're trying to bring forth some of this information that, I mean, they've got a space program that's in a black budget that, am I saying that right? Black budget?
Yeah. Budgets that's kind of hidden. Yeah.
Hidden budgets,
yeah.
that is doing all kinds of things that they're visualizing and showing in these programs.
You mean like HARP and that kind of thing?
Just kind of the space stuff. I mean,
recognizing space,
right? Because years ago I'd read some on Nikola Tesla, and he got
yes, he's very good. I some of the stuff that he did, and there was a movie made about him just recently that I saw. I can't remember the name of it, but I have a book about Tesla, and there's a lot about him online. And, I mean, he created a light source that was from the environment. In other words, it didn't utilize the huge generators and General Electric kind of things. And it would have been free to everybody. Everybody could have access to electricity. But of course that wasn't what the elite wanted. They wanted to charge people for it. And so, of course, his methods weren't used.
Well, that's the kind of, you know, when you got into this, did you find yourself kind of being guided you know, by the reading that, you know, well, you found out this and you had to go find out this. And,
you have to, it mentions something else, you've got to go and get that book, or you've got, you learn about something and then you have to, like learning about 9/11.
Right.
The first book that I read about 9/11 was one by David Ray Griffin. It's called Another Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, New Pearl Harbor or something. Yeah.
And so, my goodness, that's not, you've got to read more. You've got to know as much as you can possibly know about something.
Because there's a lot of people out there, a lot of scholars, a lot of, you know, if you go on the, there's several sites out there where there's a lot of people out there that, you know, want to get into another investigation and have a lot of questions going on with
that. Oh, right. When you have the government organizing the commissions, whether it's the Warren Commission or whether it's the 9/11 Commission, they're not going to police themselves. It's like having the police department, their internal investigations. Well, you know, they're not going to find anybody guilty of doing something. It's like letting your kids police themselves, for Pete's sake.
Have you seen William Rodriguez's movie on Google Video?
I have, and I've met him. He's a dear, dear person. I interviewed him when he came to the Chicago area in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was August of 2005. And then I saw him just recently out in California. And I correspond with him once in a while, and he's got my article on his website. He is such a genuine person.
Yeah, and his story is like, I mean, this is one of the best witnesses you could have to.
Yes, he's a credible witness. He is an honest man. He is just, I just love him. He is just a wonderful person.
Well, he's devoting, I mean, he's devoted his life since then trying to get the truth out to people.
He's constantly telling his story. He's gone all over the world. One point in time, I think it was about a year ago, we were emailing back and forth, and he told me that he'd come back from a very short trip, got to his apartment, it had been broken into, somebody had come in, taken his computer, taken all everything that related to 9/11 they took. You know, and I mean, you know who it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, CNN came out and did this big story on him and photographed him and videotaped him and everything. And then they chopped it up, censored a whole bunch of stuff out.
He was lucky they even showed it.
Exactly. I mean, it didn't contain anything. He also was before the 9/11 Commission for about 3 hours, and they didn't use any of his testimony. Nothing.
That's
nothing
right, worse. Right, right. He's there was a lot of people that were involved in that didn't even make it into the testimony.
Sure, but look at who they chose to be the chairman of the commission. Henry Kissinger. I mean, he's a Kissinger of death, for Pete's sake. He's a war criminal.
Well, the rest of them on that group, if you followed up on their background, were kind of...
Everybody was complicit. Everybody was connected. Everybody had alternative motives. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was as bad as the Warren Commission with their single bullet theory, and that was promoted by Gerald Ford. And because I personally believe that because of his complicity on the Warren Commission that he was promised the presidency. I mean, you know, with power elite, if you do this for us, we'll let you be vice president. Or maybe we'll let you be president if you'll do this, this, and this. I mean, it's just all reward and you know, it's terrible.
Well, I noticed one of your books here is you've got Expendable Elite with Daniel Marvin.
Right, right.
And I'm going to have him come on program here, coming up here.
Really?
Mm-hmm. He's a,
I'd love to hear that.
Well, we are streamed on the internet. I think they're going to start putting up our guests that are coming up. So we're kind of, I'm learning this technology. I'm a grandmother too that decided, you know, I'm not sure that people in my area are really, I mean, I know that there's, the truth is out there, but you have to go seek it out. And I thought, you know, here we have a station here in our area that, well, I didn't think I would be the person on the radio, but I thought I would contribute towards a program so that we could get the information out there.
Uh-huh.
And the fun part about it is I go, I'd like to talk to that person, and I just kind of, you know, find their website and find out how to get a hold of them. And I've been amazed at how many people that, you know, very good guests like you, and that agree to come on when I...
I think it's fabulous. I think it's fabulous, and there are so many good radio shows, radio programs, and
there's so many people willing to give their time to put the truth out there if people are willing to look. And there's so many good books. There's so much information on the internet. There's so much on radio, but you have to know where to look, because if you're not, you're being led to be, you know, be dumbed down.
Right.
So
you're being carefully led down to hell, basically.
Yeah, and you, I see some that you've read on propaganda.
Oh, yeah. That is such a big industry. Do you know that the Pentagon spends millions of dollars each year on propaganda?
And you have to ask
yourself, well, why would the Pentagon do that?
And it isn't just for the guys that are enemies either.
Right, they have to spin the stories. They have to create those wonderful commercials that you see on TV where the Marine goes up to the mountain to fight the dragon. I mean, they spend millions on propaganda. They also spend millions on propaganda. For instance, the Hill & Knowlton Company, they spent millions in Iraq. They also spend, you know, all the groups of illegal aliens who have gotten together to have demonstrations against or for us accepting amnesty and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Those people are bought.
In other words,
people don't organize themselves. These people, and for instance, when we saw the statue of Saddam Hussein falling,
mm-hmm.
that was all propaganda. That was all, you know, for show. And when we see the people when we saw the people years ago in Kuwait who had all these American flags, and they were all excited that we'd come to save them, who do you think supplied those flags? I mean, all these propaganda companies. Government spends millions. They spend millions to fool us. It's the taxpayer money. We're paying to be deceived. And the grandfather of propaganda is Edward Bernays, and he was the nephew of Freud. He was Austrian.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he worked for the government agency that promoted propaganda for World War One. You know, we still had to be talked into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what this government agency did under Wilson is that, let's see, who was it? I guess it was Edward Bernays said, you know, if you can't get them to go to war, telling them just about the enemy, you got to throw in some atrocities. Atrocities will always get people to go to war. And so they were talking about how these Belgian babies, they tore the arms off, the Germans tore the arms off these Belgian babies, and all these horrible atrocity stories. And that inflamed and enraged the American people. I mean, my goodness, that was horrible. Of course they're going to go and sign up. They're going to go and enlist to prevent these atrocious things from happening. And the same thing with when they were trying to get us to go into the Gulf War. They said, they even brought this person to testify on TV. It was a 15-year-old girl, and she claimed to have seen the Iraqis go into the hospital and take the babies out of the incubator.
Yeah, that was Gulf War One, right.
She turned out to be one of the ambassador's daughters. And on TV, she was crying. Oh, my goodness. That was all propaganda. Everything, all propaganda.
Yeah, it's amazing that. Then you get into the psychology. I mean, one of these. There were several little. One was on controlling the human mind: the techniques of political control and tools for peak performance by Dr. Nick Baggage.
Oh yes, he's written a couple of very interesting books. Let me get to my reading list.
I've run across. He was doing some radio programs on the internet.
Oh right, right.
And then his dad was a politician that was. His plane went down in the Alaska, I understand.
Yes, was one of those unique unexplained plane crashes.
Well, there are a few of them out there. I mean,
yes.
the plane crashes or these cars cross the center line, and they,
right.
These people have these head-ons. When right. you start doing a lot of research into some of the politics and the things going on behind the scenes, you can really start tallying up questionable deaths.
Like the JFK Jr. plane crash?
Right.
To hear it told on the media, you'd think, oh, just some rich kid just thinking that he can fly and when the weather is not correct, and you know that's not the way it happened at all.
No,
I mean they waited 15 hours to go out and find him, and there was an additional person on board. It was a flight instructor because he needed some extra. He wanted the extra person there because this was a newer plane that he'd just gotten. But he was a very experienced pilot. And there's a video out. I just watched it this week. Very, very good video. It tells about all of the circumstances.
That was done by the same guy that did JFK 2.
Right.
And that showed a Bush connection to the John Kennedy murder.
Yeah, John Kennedy, the first John Kennedy, the present Kennedy assassination.
Right.
And, my goodness, you know, you have to, any politician who is assassinated, it's a government assassination. It isn't the lone nut. This was a government job. It was done by the government. Any political assassination is done by the government.
But they do like the lone gunman one, and that's where knowing your history and looking back into some of these events, you're going to start finding a lot of the same scenarios are done over and over because they worked before.
Sure. If it worked, hey, if they can use the John Booth, John Wilkes Booth, yeah. Hey, it worked. Worked with them, him, and you notice that the perpetrators, the 9/11 perpetrators, Lee Harvey Oswald, everybody is immediately unavailable. You know, they never actually have time to question these people because they immediately get knocked off themselves. Or dead, or they're gone, or, they got to get rid of the evidence.
Well, another interesting thing that takes place in these is because I've done a lot of look. I mean, I haven't read all the books, but I have looked into a lot of different stories involved, and that's where the Dan Marvin even comes in, the one that I'm going to interview.
Right.
Because he was actually even approached to be a shooter for the JFK assassination, from my understanding.
Right.
And then I've listened to a Jim Rothstein who, he's got a whole nother spin on what took place and somebody named, I can't even remember all the names, but because what happens when you find these events, it's like they create five or six different stories, and so they can all be very credible stories.
Right.
And people back it up with all kinds of facts, but it's like they hire a bunch of them and say, I'll show up to the event, and we'll create a story behind it, and in case, you know, it looks like it's going to get hot on you, then we'll bring out this other story, and then we'll kind of deflect it. It's really amazing.
I'm reading a book now called Dope, Inc.
Uh-huh.
And it first came out in 78. But it talks about that the British were behind it. And I mean, it's just very interesting. I mean, it mentioned Clay Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there's so many different...
There's still... I've just heard one or two new ones just recently, and I bet there's 8 or 10 already out there.
Sure. And right after it happened, and when Jim Garrison wrote his book on it, which was very, very interesting, and I just knew that it wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald. And so I read everything I could about it. And I knew that the Warren Commission was just a big phony cover-up. And just the things that happened, you know, the escalation of the war, everything. I mean, it was just so obvious. It was just so obvious. And you have the same thing here. You have something tragic happen, and then you have war. You have an escalation, and basically the March 03 invasion, that was just really a continuation of the first Gulf War. We just never left the country alone. Because from the first Gulf War, you had 12 years of sanctions where 500,000 children died. I mean, that's so egregious, so egregious. And then we go in and we invade them again. And just since our invasion in 03, over 1 million civilians have passed away, have died.
Right.
Over 1 million Iraqis. Do you ever hear that on TV? Never. You never hear it. And, you know, I have friends that I had lunch with friends yesterday, and they said, oh, there's so many terrible things going on, these horrible terrorists, and I just want to throttle people, you know, because some people you can talk to, and some people, they're going to roll their eyes at you. And avoid you the next time they see you.
Actually, I'm going to have a couple of, I mean, I had Doug Rocky on, and
oh,
I've
he's such a nice guy. I like him.
Yes, and so, I mean, and so informative, the information.
Yes, I saw him in March at a convention, and he's in the film Beyond, the video Beyond Treason.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And Lorraine Murray, we've had her on there, on the program too.
Oh, yeah. Great! Yeah, they have so much credibility, so much experience. I mean, they tell it like it is, and oh my goodness, his story is just.
But telling the truth doesn't come without its negatory things.
That's
for
sure.
Yeah, and
that's for sure.
And but you know. There's a lot of people out there that are really getting it of what's going on, and unless we start waking people up, you know, people need to know what's planned for us, and there is no such thing as a coincidence.
Oh, everything that happens. I think Roosevelt said this. If it happened, it happened on purpose.
I mean, these
guys. If something happens in government, you can bet that it was planned to happen that way.
I mean, these guys plan it centuries in advance.
Oh, sure. 9/11 was planned. It didn't happen just, you know, it wasn't planned the week before. It was planned probably a few years before. And it was planned to bring us closer to the New World Order. It was planned to scare us, to put fear into us, so that we would accept personal ID, so that we would accept Homeland Security. You know, the Gestapo, so that we would allow our government to go and invade another country. Invade another country. That's unconstitutional.
What's interesting is the guy that's head of it has dual citizenship. Now, why would we allow that?
Top. What is that all about? And what about that $2.3 trillion that Rumsfeld announced on September 10th? He announced that $2.3 trillion was missing in the Pentagon budget.
Right.
And what did we hear about that afterwards? Not a thing. Because we were so mesmerized by the seen the planes hit.
And they played it over and over and over.
And over and over and over. Deliberately.
Yeah, that's a technique for...
Sure. That's a technique for brainwashing and indoctrination. Repetitiveness.
And doing it through trauma.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, it was very interesting. In fact, I have an article by Leslie Raphael about the Nadé brothers, who just happened to be in the only street that had a clear shot of both towers. They just happened to be in the middle of the street, and that street just happened to be blocked off, and they just happened to be there because there was a call to the fire department that they just happened to be photographing to go out and look and check this this oil leak. So they just happened to be there. Now, isn't that interesting that they just happened to be there? Because otherwise, we wouldn't have had all of the...
footage of the plane hitting the building.
Footage. And, you know, when they did, a long time ago, and I wasn't alive, but when they did the radio show, The War of the Worlds, I mean, people thought that was for real. They thought that they were being invaded by space aliens. And we are such visionary people. We are taught visually. A lot of times, you know, people can learn auditorily. If they hear something, they can learn it. But most of us, I think 75% of us, learn better visually. We need to see something. We need to see the book. We need to read the words or see the pictures, and we learn better. And that's what I think this is all about, was to provide. They didn't just happen to be there. They were planted there. And, you know, it's funny. They said that they were international photographers. Well, you know, what have they done since, and what did they do before? Nothing.
Did you check into that?
This article by Leslie is so well documented. This man, he lives in Scotland. This is his life. The Nadé brothers' situation is his life. He has done more work, more research. He has followed down more trails and facts on this.
What was his name again?
Leslie Raphael.
How did you spell it?
He is on my website.
Oh, okay.
Under other articles by other people.
Okay.
And it's just called, I think it's just called the Nadé Brothers. And it's lengthy, but worth the read. If you read that, you'll know for certain that those people, the Nadé Brothers, were situated in that location to film that particular event.
There's a group that is actually following some of that out there that are trying to bring some suits related with the Nadé Brother film.
Really?
It's Hawk's Cafe is what it's called, and it's a group of people currently, you know, around the world that are actually, you know, participating and trying to make somebody accountable for what's going on, what took place on that day. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I it's one of those things that is so complex that it's really hard to follow, and I'm not sure that I totally sign on to it, but but they are trying to make follow through on some of these leads and make somebody accountable for some of the things that took place, because that didn't happen by, I mean, that's the first time NORAD's never, you know, responded to a plane, you know, flying where it's not supposed to.
And there were 67 times in the previous 12 months that a plane went off track, and they were stopped. NORAD responded with the appropriate response 67 times. And you're telling me that on that day, of course, there were the war games going on,
right?
And those war games were under the authority, the control of the Pentagon, and
But that one day, Cheney happened to be the one in, that was...
Exactly. And on July 1st, they changed, the procedure was changed for NORAD to respond. It had to go through, I believe it was Rumsfeld. I've written about this.
Mm-hmm.
But it changed. It had to go through the Secretary of Defense. They had to check with him before they responded. Now, what was that all about? And even the insurance thing. The insurance thing with the buildings. The lease with the buildings.
Right.
The asbestos fraud, or the asbestos suit. There was a lawsuit that Silverstein... okay. Back in 89, when all of the asbestos situation presented itself,
mm-hmm.
The towers were not heavily rented, you know. So they thought, okay, we need to do something, because when renters wanted to come in, they wanted to reformat the area, and this would have presented the asbestos. You know, asbestos is perfectly safe unless it's airborne.
Okay.
And because there was asbestos in the building, and because of the regulations that the government had done, they couldn't just go in and start ripping up these buildings. So the Port Authority thought, okay, we had better do some asbestos abatement. And so they started their abatement process and discovered that it was going to cost them millions of dollars to do this. And so they thought, okay, gosh, we'll try and get our insurance companies to pay for it. And so they started this process in 91. They tried the abatement in 89, and by 91 they decided that they would sue their insurance companies to not only pick up future abatement, but they would also have to pay for the abatement that they had already done at the towers. And the lawsuit, after 10 years, it came to a conclusion in April of 01.
Mm-hmm.
And the court said, and it was a court in New Jersey, it was not a court in New York, it was done in New Jersey. And the court said that the insurance companies were not liable. Let me find that article so I can...
Somewhere I think I did hear something about that.
Let me just...
But the interesting thing about that whole event, all those events, is there's question after question after question after question after question. And the more that the answers that the government comes up with only brings up more questions. They don't really answer anything that has any... I mean, if you accept it, then that's, you know, that's your folly. Because there's more questions out there that took place. They gagged a lot of the firemen and policemen.
Oh, sure. They said, you know, you open your mouth, you're going to be out of a job. And, of course, Sybil Edmonds, I mean, they gagged her. But she recently gave gave an interview. And she's a very courageous person. Incredibly, incredibly courageous.
Right.
But, yes, this asbestos lawsuit ended up in 01.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have this, the Port Authority can't do anything with the buildings. It's going to cost them millions of dollars. They can't get the authority to demolish them because of the environmental impact. They couldn't get a license to demolish them. It's an article of mine. It's called Killing Several Birds with One Stone.
Okay.
And it has the whole asbestos lawsuit, all the details, every detail. And it talks about what happened, why it happened, who was involved, Silverstein and Lowry, Peter Lowry, Lowy. And, you know, Silverstein already had control of building number 7. And
of number 7?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Which also fell, but nobody ever talks about that.
Right. It's interesting. And in the most incredible footage is where they've got the lady over in England. Or no, she was here.
Oh, is that amazing?
Yes.
She's talking about it falling and it's still in the background because
right.
she was...
She didn't know that building, she didn't know the building, you know.
Of course not. And here she's talking about how it had fallen and it hadn't fallen yet. But anyway, Louis Eisenberg was the chairman of the Port Authority of New York. And so he began the lease negotiations in April of 01, at about the same time that the court said, no, the insurance companies are not going to pay for the abatement. And so, okay, they said, oh, okay, we'll lease them out. And we'll lease them out to our good buddy Silverstein. Larry Silverstein and Louis Eisenberg were both really good buddies. They knew each other. They'd worked on several committees. And Eisenberg was the chairman of the Republican National Finance Committee in Washington, D.C., and he had raised so much money for the Republicans. Now, I'm not a Republican, and I'm not a Democrat. I'm a constitutionalist. But so when I talk about the Republicans, I'm not bashing them because I'm a Democrat. I'm bashing them because they deserve to be bashed. The Democrats also deserve to be bashed. But anyway, Eisenberg had raised all kinds of money. He had donated $300,000 to the 04 Bush-Cheney campaign. And he had donated a bunch of money to the 2000 campaign. And so they got together and they decided that Silverstein would lease the buildings. And he also, before he leased them, part of his lease that if, and part of his insurance agreement was that if anything happened to the buildings, that he wouldn't have to pay the lease. You know, if somebody destroyed them, that he wasn't held responsible for the lease. Now, isn't that something? Can you imagine the private citizen trying to get away something like that? You know, well, if my house burns down, then, you know, I don't have to pay
for
it.
You don't have to pay it off. Really? That's the case? I didn't realize that.
That is what he did, yes, indeed.
Wow.
And so, I mean, they just got away with murder because, you see, they couldn't have demolished buildings because they couldn't get a license to do that because of the environmental things. So what better way of having 19 Islamic terrorists come in, destroy the buildings, they wouldn't have any culpability for it, no environmental, you know, they wouldn't be blamed for anything if you have somebody else do it. And it's literally killing several birds with one stone. And they got to do. They got to go to war. They got to go and have a reason to go in Iraq, although they never proved that Iraq had anything to do with it. Of course, Cheney, as soon as it happened, Cheney said, oh, gather all the information you can to try and pin Iraq, or, you know, combine Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, you know,
okay.
Put them together. Of course, they were mortal enemies, but not according to the press.
Well, that's the interesting part about this whole thing is that when you really start trying to dig for truth and whatever, you do find that there is a plan. There's a plan that's been going on for a long time. When you read some of the books of H.G. Wells, I mean, these guys have been planning what is going on now for a long, long time.
Oh, absolutely. With this War of the Worlds. I mean, But all the things that happened because of 01, because of 9/11, killed 3,000 unsuspecting people, destroyed the health of a lot of others, created fear and insecurity in the American population. It helped the Port Authority get rid of their money-losing property. It created vacant prime acreage for potential new money-making buildings, financially benefited Larry Silverstein, blanketed New York with hazardous pollutants, and without any accountability or liability to the city of New York. It reinforced the neocon claim of Islamo-fascist terrorism, created the new Pearl Harbor so that the neocons that they suggested in 1998. They wrote Clinton and said, you know, we really need a new Pearl Harbor. They wrote that letter. It's in a letter that they wrote to Clinton.
No, that's not the project for a new American century then.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. It produced a war environment. It got Halliburton and Bechtel and all those other big companies into some no-bid contracts that they were given simply because they were well-connected. It established a dictatorship in America. It made Bush a wartime commander-in-chief. I refer to him as a criminal-in-chief. That is my what I call him.
Well, actually, there was. In fact, I might even have that article that I copied out of the off the internet. That there was a site where he was more or less seen with Putin, and at the and the reporter says, "Mr. President, following up on Vladimir Putin for a moment, he said recently that next year, when he has to step down according to the Constitution as the president, he may become prime minister, in effect, keeping power and dashing any hopes for a genuine democratic transition there."
I mean, if they create martial law, if there's some other situation that occurs that they've orchestrated, and they orchestrate or they initiate martial law, I mean, who knows? Who knows? We don't know what they're going to do.
Well,
we know what they've done.
Mm-hmm. But what he did say, Bush said, "I've been planning that myself."
Sure.
I mean, you know, when he made that comment about, you know, he doesn't mind me, you know, if there was a dictator as long as, it, you know.
Oh,
it was
right.
Him.
He didn't mind dictatorship as long as he could beat the dictator.
Right. So,
yeah.
I mean, he doesn't always give you disinformation. In fact, sometimes I found him to be very truthful, but if the people react to it and wake up from their slumber, then they start fibbing.
All right. Well, you know, the power elite do that. They give us truths just like with Brzezinski's book, The Grand Chessboard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he laid it out.
Exactly.
He laid the whole thing out. But the population don't read those kinds of things.
Yeah, everything that they want to do in making a one world is already. I mean, they started with the European Union.
Oh, sure, it's all laid out.
Right.
But we're just not relating it to ourselves. It's just like we're always told, you know, study the scriptures, read the scriptures, and then apply it to yourselves. Somehow we just don't ever do that. We just don't do that. We always think it's for somebody else. We always think, oh, those poor communist countries. Oh, look at China. Look what's happening in China. Those poor people. Well, look what's happening in America.
I noticed that you had a book here that you had read by Ezra. An Enemy Hath Done This by Ezra
Taft Benson. Yes.
What was that book about?
Basically, it came out about in 1976, 1974. It's an old book.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it warns us of things that are going to happen and tries to alert us to these things. We have enemies within our own country, within our own government, and we're just not paying attention. We're just not paying attention.
Right, and that's why, you know, don't take our word for anything that we're saying, because, I mean, the whole idea is go out there and start doing your own research on this. I mean, there's such a vast amount of information out there to learn from and find out what's going on. There's going on in our world, and it isn't going to be a good thing.
You know, some of the books that I really enjoy, if you want to get into this really quick, is to read the censored books.
I've never heard of those. I saw that whole list.
They're put out by Project Censored, and they have a website, Project Censored, and you can mm-hmm. read their 25 articles. But they feature 25 great stories that were censored per year.
Oh, okay.
Fabulous stuff. Absolutely fabulous stuff. And if people just want to see, okay, well, what did I miss? And you can get into those, and then you think, well, gosh, if they're not telling us about that, and that seems so important, what else aren't they telling us about?
Well, it's kind of like a few weeks ago, we were listening to, you know, you were hearing that whole thing about the baseball drugging and that sort of thing. Well, I mean, that's old news from way back. But in the meantime, they're passing this gun act to take guns away from our veterans.
Exactly.
And that's,
whenever they're focusing on fluff, you have to wonder what they're doing.
Right. Always look the other direction, because if they really start coming out hot and heavy on phony stories and or stories that they just go on and on and on and just keep the heat up, start looking somewhere else, because there is so much legislation right now that goes on that a person that is active and has time to keep up with it couldn't.
The homegrown terrorism. Oh, my goodness. That was passed last year. In the fall of last year.
Right.
That is absolutely terrible. Basically, they could call anybody they want a terrorist. Anybody that seeks to persuade others, you know, like you, me, any of us, anybody that they can target, they can accuse us of being a terrorist. And this is focused on the American citizen. This is not for you know, illegal aliens. This is directed at us.
Right. We've got constant.
And they just slipped it by. They just slipped it by.
They pretty well.
Without ever talking about it.
I mean, there's been a direct assault on our Constitution where there's really not much of them that are left.
There's nothing left. There's nothing left. We're going to have national ID. And that is so invasive. I mean, they can break into your home now and with no search warrant. They can put you in jail without charging you. They can do that to American citizens.
Right, and there's not a lot of recourse you can have on under certain circumstances. Some people, you know, you probably never hear of again.
That's right. The flights where they can just whisk you off and take you to wherever they want to take you and torture you. And you think, well, Americans don't torture people. Well, you know, what about Abu Ghraib? I mean, they were torturing people. And it's documented. And yet they tried to keep that secret for months and months and months.
Well,
but it's well documented.
Yeah, and these tasers, you know.
And
I mean,
tasers. And that incident down at the University of Virginia where that young man was tasered, I mean, that's terrible. And they have tasered people in wheelchairs. They've tasered, people have died from being tasered.
Oh, yes.
That is cruel and unusual. Because if a person is already down on the ground, why are you tasering them? Why are you tasering anybody? I mean, it's egregious punishment for people who are not even... It's really bad. It's just really, really bad.
Well, if we don't start speaking up, and if we don't start, you know, I mean, this is our last hurrah.
And, it is.
And if we don't really start paying attention to and speaking up, I mean, nobody else is going to do it for us.
No.
Everybody else is bought and paid for that's signed on to Agenda 21, the Law of the Sea Treaty, biodiversity. All these things may have sound like they're fine and wonderful legislation. Yeah, if you want to be in a totalitarian feudalistic government where they tell you everything you can and can't do, that's exactly what they've got planned.
Right. And then there's the psychiatry issue. You were talking about controlling people. Do you realize how many people are in psychiatric drugs
that
really don't need to be? I just watched a video. It's called Psychiatry, An Industry of Death.
Mm-hmm.
And when we see people who are like Columbine and other people, other instances where people have gone into schools or where they've gone out and killed a bunch of people, a lot of these people are on those psychiatric drugs.
I've heard that.
And they are going to use this, these incidences, to enact gun control. I was chatting with somebody yesterday on one of my lists, and he said, oh, I'm all for gun control. And I said, well, wait, you know, we have Second Amendment rights. The reason we have guns is to protect ourselves from the government.
Right. I had Larry Pratt on last weekend. And
oh, yeah, he's great. He's great on that.
Yeah, or last week. And if we don't have the ability to protect ourselves, who's going to protect us?
Nobody. And this guy is saying, oh, we've got to have gun control. And well, you know, the government is always going to have guns. They are always going to have guns. And it's the people with the guns that are going to be in control.
And I'll have to admit, I never was a big proponent of it until I realized, you know, there's a reason behind it.
There's a reason behind it. There is a reason behind it. And it's our Second Amendment rights. And when they did the Bill of Rights, hey, they did it for a reason. Everything, before they would accept and ratify the Constitution, they had to include that Bill of Rights. Because they knew from their experience with the British Empire, they knew what they needed to write. And you look at the Bill of Rights now, and you think, oh my goodness, what's left? What's left here?
I don't think there is much left. You know,
right.
I mean, they're legislating it now, but they've actually broken just about every
single one of them.
Right. And the only way that we're going to have a Constitution or Bill of Rights is unless we demand that it's utilized. I mean,
right.
it's the people. It's not, you know, the government doesn't care about the Bill of Rights or the Constitution. It doesn't.
No. And
it wasn't,
in fact, George W. Bush called it. I'm not going to say what he called it, but he pretty much said that it didn't matter to him.
Right. I wanted to briefly run over some of these book titles that you read. And one of them is Bluebird, Deliberate Creation of Multiple Personality by Psychiatrists.
Yes, that is a weird book. That is a very strange book.
Is it
but
worth reading?
It's well documented.
Ah.
And
I've heard of Project Bluebird.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some books that, like the Franklin Cover-Up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so you are familiar with. I just got done reading Transformation of America.
Oh, yes. And you think, oh, that's just too far out. That's too far. And then you start reading this stuff and you think, no, I don't want to know this stuff. You know, there's some things you really, really don't want to know because you can't imagine that anybody
functions that way.
People who are supposed to be your leaders,
right, around the world,
believe that they are so perverse and evil and wicked and degenerate.
Right, and these are, you know, these people document their work pretty good, and you know, at least it's, you know, keep your eyes open, because when you really start finding out what it's all about, one of the best films to depict it is called The Endgame. Alex Jones, have you seen that one?
Yes, I have.
And
he's a showman. He's kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I like him. You know, some people think he's, you know, arrogant.
I've heard some say he sounds like Rush Limbaugh.
But he's not the same.
No.
He's not quite as arrogant.
He
documents, and you know what? Anybody that can sneak into Bohemian Garden.
Bohemian Grove, right.
Oh, yeah, the Grove. I get up at 4:30, and I went to sleep probably like about 8:30, 9 o'clock. My time. So.
Well, you know,
mine stops working about 8 p.m. So anybody that has the courage to sneak into that place, and, you know, he's got my vote. He's got my respect.
And that's the whole thing, is this material gets into, you find out that all of these books, even though as diverse as information, Close Encounters of the religious kind, that's
oh, yes. Religion is being used so much. I mean, these politicians hire religious counselors to figure out how they can fool the American people into thinking that they are actually religious. George W. Bush, oh, my goodness, he learned the lingo to say the right things. And the religious right, they just follow right along. I mean, no matter whether it says, you know, thou shalt not kill and all of the other religious platitudes, I mean, that's all it is. Mm-hmm. Because these people, I mean, they're supporting war. And you have to ask yourself, well, okay, who would Jesus bomb? Who would Jesus bomb? He wouldn't bomb anybody.
Right, right.
And yet the religious right, because the Luciferians have used religion, you know, give people a little bit of truth and combine it with a whole bunch of lies, and then push that part that's true, so they'll accept all the garbage, all the lies. And it's sad. So many people are fooled.
Yeah,
so many people.
You've got
fooled.
Some books by Eustace Mullins and
I love him.
Right. And I'm trying to find the other ones that I was looking at, because there's so many of them. Tragedy and Hope by Carol Quigley, which
that's a big, thick, huge book. But was everybody that's into the New World Order should have that book.
That's what I did acquire that one. It was kind of my brother's trying to trudge through it now.
Right. It's a good reference book. Anything you want to look up, I mean, it's, you know, one of the first books that I read about the conspiracy was None Dare Call It Conspiracy by Gary Allen.
And what about None Dare Call It Treason?
Yeah. Those have been out for years. And, you know, None Dare Call It Conspiracy is, it came out like in 71 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And None Dare Call It Treason, that came out, you know, about the same period of time.
Okay, I'm going to have to call it an evening here. So I really appreciate you coming on, Deanna, and hope we can do this again sometime.
Oh, I would love to. I would love to.
Oh, great. And so I've got to do a couple of public service announcements here before I sign off for the evening. So, Deanna, I'd like to say good night for you.
Well, thank you so much. And good night to you.
Okay, goodbye.